For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and Talkspace, the leading virtual therapy provider, is encouraging people to talk it out in therapy. By talking or texting with a supportive, licensed therapist at Talkspace, you'll gain insights, discover truths, and experience breakthroughs that will improve how you live and how you feel. With Talkspace, just answer a few questions online, and you'll be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, whenever you feel most at ease. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members only pay a $25 copay or less. No insurance? No problem. If you want to make progress toward a mentally healthier place, Talkspace is here for you. Now get $80 off your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
Welcome to Get Over It, the Consciousness Transforming Podcast for Exceptional 21st Century Living. Folks, we're going to have a very interesting show today. We're speaking with Mark Ireland, and we're talking about his newest book, The Persistence of the Soul, Medium Spirit Visitations and Afterlife Communication. And you know, this time of year, all of this is very important because the information just flows through as the veil is lessened between the two worlds. So sit back, listen, and then do your own investigation. This is going to be quite an interesting show. This man has a very interesting past. Now, the information shared on Get Over It uses intuitive and pragmatic insight to help you shift your consciousness to break through blocks and release energy that is no longer needed. Yes, we're going to help you let go of the BS that's been holding you back, but you guys know I always ask, are you truly ready to? And by the way, folks, BS is belief system. A bit about me for my new listeners, intuitive since birth. I'm a third generation intuitive with over 3 decades of experience supporting people to break through the blocks along their path. I'm a strategist for personal and professional transformation, revealing cutting edge information that enables you to prosper and thrive. I spent 25 successful years in corporate America as an executive sales professional, and I'm the founder of Healing Visions Ministries and the Northern California Children's Education Network, a 501c3 nonprofit. I provide consultations and healings in all areas of life that heal the mind-body-spirit connection, allowing you to live your very best life. My clients tell me that I keep it real while providing them with accurate information to assist them along their journey as a spirit living a human existence. But they also say, if you really don't want to know, don't ask Monique. My background includes a doctorate in metaphysics, Reiki master teacher, ordained minister, and clinical hypnotherapist. So whether you are stressed, depressed, or possessed, I can help. To find out more about me and the services I offer, go to my website, and that's MoniqueChapman.com. And I invite you to like and follow me on Facebook and LinkedIn. My guest today, Mark Ireland, is the co-founder of Helping Parents Heal, an organization with more than 24,000 members that assist bereaved parents worldwide. He has participated in mediumship research studies conducted by the University of Arizona and the University of Virginia, and he is currently He currently operates a medium certification program. He's also the author of Soul Shift, and he lives in the state of Washington. And you can check him out at his website, and that is maxerlinauthor.com. markerlinauthor.com, markerlinauthor, all one word, .com. Welcome, Mark.
Hey, Monique, it's good to be here. How are you doing?
Great. It's good to have you here. Very interesting book that you wrote. You seem to have a lot of, well, not a lot, but the deaths that are in your family you chronicled and, you know, starting, you know, heartbreakingly, I guess, with your son that passed away. But before we delve into that, give us a little back information about your background and how you came to this place of writing about the afterlife.
Yeah, it's kind of a unique story in that I grew up with a father who was a prominent psychic and medium, working mainly in the 1950s, 60s, 70s, and 80s. So kind of ahead of the curve in many ways and a pioneer, so to speak. I grew up with, you know, the psychic phenomena occurring in the household on a daily basis, where as a kid, you couldn't get away with anything. And but also saw my father, both in his non-denominational church, demonstrate spirit communication, and then also providing psychic demonstrations in secular venues, TV shows and things like that, with spirit apparent occasionally popping through, delivering specific information and messages to people in the audience or congregation at the church that really showed me at a young age, like, wow, there really is more than just this physical existence. And so it gave me a confidence in there being a spiritual dimension to life, even though I didn't necessarily understand it completely. But as I grew into being an adult, I didn't really take the same path as my father. I took a more conventional one, going to the university, getting a degree, going into the business world, getting married at a young age and having a couple of boys. So I was, you know, I guess none of us wants to be our parent exactly. And even though my dad said I was very psychic, I just, you know, took that other more conventional path. But it was when my youngest son turned 18, about 3 months after that, he passed unexpectedly while hiking the mountains behind our home, the McNowell Mountains in Scottsdale, Arizona. And that kind of shook me back into this field and to look more at my dad's work, because a lot of folks at that point, you're in shock if your child passes. I don't care what your belief system is. Tough, tough thing. But at least I had that knowledge, and it wasn't just blind faith. It was having, you know, witnessed firsthand this, the communication from the other side that to me was indisputable. And so I drew back into it and started exploring it and took on my own journey. And that resulted in my first book, Soul Shift, Finding Where the Dead Go. But I'd say the very first thing that happened, the first two things, the first one was I wanted a direct connection a day or two after Brandon passed. And I went into a darkened room, which was actually my walk-in closet with no light on, sat down and tried to meditate. And while I'm not a great meditator in this instance, I was able to clear my mind, and I saw my son's face go by, like surrounded with, he was glowing and happy and joyful. I could see that and feel that. And then immediately following that was a cross with an oval loop at the top. And while I'd seen those, I didn't really know what they symbolized. So when I was done, me being the analytic brain, went to Google what that was, and I found out that it's the Ankh, or the oldest cross of human history from the Egyptians, dated back about 5,000 years, with the lower portion of the cross representing physical life and the oval loop representing eternal life. So I got kind of a coded message that told me my son was in the afterlife and he was joyful, which if I had already known what that symbol meant, it would have been different, because then I could have blamed my subconscious mind as giving me something to make me feel better. But instead, I had to decode the message. And then I'd say the next thing that was substantial that happened was, I think it was about 3 days after Brandon passed, I heard from my uncle. Now, my uncle had similar abilities to my father, and my father had been gone about 12 years by this point. And my uncle connected with me by cell phone. I was in the mortuary at the time making arrangements for everything. And he said, Mark, I just wanted to let you know something. You know, last night I tried to connect and I couldn't get anything. But this morning, your father came to me and he said he was there when Brandon passed. Brandon was a little confused at first, but your dad helped him cross over and adjust. And then the other piece, then he shared the feel-good message, which was, you know, Brandon says you were the best parents he ever could have had. But following on the heels of that was, your dad said Brandon's death was caused by a lack of oxygen in his bloodstream that caused his heart to fail. And I hadn't had the autopsy results yet. We didn't know the cause of death. 2 days later, I talked to the physician who had conducted the autopsy, and she said that Brandon had suffered a severe asthma attack that drew his blood oxygen levels down to a point causing cardiac arrest. So that was really the second thing that started me, where my uncle gave me the cause of death before the autopsy.
That is really fascinating that, you know, you get the validation, you know, and you didn't know that it was coming, but you received the validation. I do want to back up a minute, though, and talk about your dad, Dr. Richard Ireland. Why don't you share the audience what he did and how he eventually impacted your life, even though you didn't plan on going down that path?
Yeah. So, well, he grew up in rural Ohio. And I guess he was born in 32. So this would have been in the 30s and 40s. He, at the age of five, he went in for corrective surgery to the Columbus, Ohio Children's Hospital because he was born cross-eyed. And after the surgery, they had his eyes cupped and bandaged, and they had him actually tied down to a bed so he wouldn't mess with the bandages. A nurse came by and felt sorry for him and told him that she'd let him out of the bed if he promised not to mess with the bandages. He agreed. So she went on her walk, and when she came back, he was against the wall and catching it. And she thought, oh my God, he's taken the bandages off, but he hadn't. So that was probably even more disturbing to her. Then she pulled in some doctors to show them what was going on. And they tried a few, you know, random experiments with him. They put him in his bed and then had one doctor at the foot of the bed and another at the doorway and asked, who's standing in front of you right now? And he got it right every time. So that was kind of the family's first discovery of the fact that he had this clairvoyance, extreme clairvoyance. And fast forwarding, I think he was probably 12 or 13 when he, you know, he'd had these experiences and made predictions and things, and it was not accepted by his family, at least his father and his older brothers. But he was usually right, but they didn't like it. I remember one story where they lived, they had no telephone and no, you know, no communication method. But his grandfather, who lived, you know, X number of miles away, my dad would always say, hey, grandpa's coming. And it got to the point where the meals were actually planned around when he would say that, because the grandparents would show up within a reasonable period of time of that. And one time my dad said, you know, grandpa's coming and his beard's cut off. And his brother says, you're crazy, crazy Dick. There's no way, you know, grandpa loves that beard. He'd never shave it off. And grandpa showed up and the beard was gone. And it seems grandpa had been making taffy and his beard got into the taffy, so he had to cut it off.
Oh, wow.
So that was kind of the, you know, the upbringing. And then I think at the age 12, 13, he stumbled into a spiritualist church for the first time. Now, this was 2 weeks after his best friend had died in a car accident. And he and the buddy had been playing in a creek the night before the boy died. And the boy's mother had called him to come home so that they could go to a theater that night, to the movies, and they were going to go out to dinner. And he says, I'll see you tomorrow, Dick, because my dad as a kid went by Dick instead of Richard. And my dad just blurted out, no, tomorrow you'll be dead. Now, he didn't mean to say that. It just came out. The next morning, my dad was woken up by somebody throwing rocks against his window. And then it was other kids that had discovered that the friend had died the night before in a car accident and were kind of blaming my dad, not understanding that he had just forecasted this. It wasn't anything that he had anything to do with. So back to my dad stumbling into the spiritualist church, he goes in and a minister there put tape and blindfolds over his eyes, asked for people to write questions on pieces of paper and send them up. So when my dad got there, he said, what should I write? And the attendant just said, just write a message, please, and then sign your name, which he did. He sent that up, And when his turn came, the minister, who was a psychic medium, said, Richard Ireland. And he says, yes. And then he said, well, I've got a young man here who recently crossed over, and he gives me a secret code name, and the name is Paisy. Well, my dad and this kid always had these secret code names in the creek, and the kid's name code name was Paisy. Mm-hmm. So my dad was really impressed by this, and then he talked to the minister afterward. The minister went on to say, one day you'll be doing what I do. And so he mentored my dad. And then years later, I think my dad was probably only, you know, 21 years old or whatever, he received his ordination papers from the NSAC, National Spiritualist Association of Churches, and then became a traveling minister, and then doing demonstrations and then serving at a few different churches they moved him around to. And then growing, in 1960, he founded his own non-denominational church, the University of Life, which was not affiliated with the NSAC. He, even though he was ordained in that organization, he just, I think he wanted something with less dogma even than that, so that people could form their own understanding based on their own personal experiences. So he would just present and share messages and teachings, but didn't try and really ram specific dogma down people's throats. And that church was very successful. And he also branched out into doing demonstrations in the secular world on TV. He became a counselor to Mae West, who I met when I was 19 years old.
That had to be exciting.
Yeah, I got to tour her apartment in Beverly Hills back then, and it still looked like it was 1920s. I believe he counseled the Eisenhower family as well, because I have a card from Mamie Eisenhower dated 1956, the year my parents got married, congratulating my father on behalf of the president and her on getting married.
Oh, wow.
So that was pretty cool. So that was kind of, you know, how his life unfolded. And then growing up, then my parents actually split up when I was 10 or 11 years old. So I didn't see my father as often then. But I would take friends to see his demonstrations. And if anyone listening wants to see an example of what he would do during a psychic demonstration, I have a clip from him on the Steve Allen Show in 1971. There's a link on the front page of my website you can find. And again, that's markirelandauthor.com.
Okay. Well, thank you for sharing that. You delve into so much with spirit communication and all. So talk to us first about spirit visitations. Now, I need to share with you that my husband's son passed away about a year ago. And it is, I mean, as a stepmom, it rocked me. And I can't even still to this day imagine what my husband and his ex-wife are going through, you know, losing that child. You being one that has lost a child, how can you put things in perspective and actually recognize spirit visitation, either from a deceased child of ours or anyone else?
Well, there's a number of ways. I think, first off, when you go through that kind of very traumatic experience, you have to take time to grieve. And there's a number of things that help you in your healing process. That includes support from friends and family, meeting people who have been through the same thing and developing relationships with them because they can relate to you. Coming to a point where you can provide service to others, because that comes back to heal you. Maybe not immediately, but, you know, in due time. Forgiving yourself of any guilt you may hold, because a lot of parents will say, I should have done this or I should have done that, when in reality, that's not necessarily true in most cases. Releasing anger and forgiving people who you may be holding responsible, whether that may be a doctor or someone responsible for an accident or whatever, because really it's just coming back to hurt you. And then the final piece is, I think, at least, you know, beyond therapy and things like that, would be to be open to evidence for there being an afterlife. And there's a number of different phenomena that are out there that you could read about in books or even experience directly that deal with that. One of which is mediumship, which is kind of my area of expertise. But additionally, you have the near-death experience phenomena. You have ADCs, which are called after-death communications. And those are more than one-on-one experiences. And I'll give you an example of one. Now, we've been blessed with many, many of these, but not everyone will have them. or at least as often or as tangible. So you have to, I guess, come to a point where you are looking for the subtle. You can quiet your mind enough to detect them and believe them to be real. I think the easiest way for people early on is maybe through a dream visit. And one method that worked for me would be to pray, send in a prayerful way, a request for a visit while asleep, and to pray to be able to remember it. And I've had at least one extremely vivid, more than waking reality vividness to it, visit with my son Brandon that way. I think the most profound experience we ever had, it goes back to 6 months after Brandon's passing. But it's funny because just 2 weeks after Brandon passed, I visited an intuitive and she said, I believe you're going to see Brandon at your bedside in about 6 months. Well, 6 months later, we had scheduled to go on a cruise to celebrate Brandon's pending graduation from high school. But since he wasn't physically there with us, we took our older son and Brandon's best buddy, Stu. So before leaving for the trip, we loaned Brandon's bass guitar because Brandon was a bassist. We loaned it to a gentleman named James Linton, who was a musician. Uh-huh. Now, we'd met James because he was actually on the mountain hiking the day Brandon was there, and he tried to help, but he was there too late. But he had left an online comment on an online obituary saying that he was there, and if we wanted to meet him, he gave us the contact info. So we did meet him. We became friends. Here it was 6 months later. We're going on this cruise and we loan him Brandon's bass guitar. So Jim was in the studio working on some new songs. He was a guitar player, composer, and singer, but he didn't have a bass. So we loaned him that. Anyhow, 7 days pass. We come back from the cruise. My wife goes into our master bedroom, sits on the bench in front of our bed, and suddenly feels Brandon's presence there. She knows it's him and sees him as a shadow figure out of her peripheral vision. That's remarkable enough, but the very next day we get a call from James, and James says, Susie, I have something to tell you, but I don't know how to share this. He said, well, I was she thought maybe he'd broken the bass, but he hadn't. He said, I was working on this new song, and while I was doing that, I felt another presence in the studio, and I saw a shadow figure out of my peripheral vision, and then I saw flashes of white light, and I thought, I'm just hallucinating. So he said that he went and got water, he got something to eat, he took a shower, but each time he came back, it got stronger. And then finally he acquiesced and said, okay, Brandon, what do you want? And then at that point, he felt guided, pushed strongly to change the lyrics to this song he was working on, as well as the bass line. And then he said the culmination of that was a song called The Other Side. He said, it's the best song I've ever written, but I didn't write it. So for him to report almost identical experience to my wife, Susie, the next day is pretty phenomenal. So I would say that's an example of an ADC or an after-death communication, but a very compelling one and one that's probably pretty rare.
Well, talking about after-death communication, talk to us about the Houdini code.
Sure. So Harry Houdini, as most people know, was a famous musician back in the early 20th century. And initially, I think he had an interest in mediums and afterlife, but he felt like he got tricked by a couple of fraudulent mediums, whether they were or not, I don't know. But because of that, he kind of turned, and then he wanted to debunk all mediums. So he spent a lot of his life trying to debunk mediums, including his own trickery to make them look bad in cases where they shouldn't have. But near the end of his life, he thought of developing a code to share with his wife. And then he told her name was Beatrice. He said, Beatrice, if anyone gives you this code, you'll know that it's truly me, Harry Houdini. And, you know, that I went on and I still exist. So after he died, a medium named Arthur Ford, who was a very prominent medium of the 20th century, did deliver the code successfully to her. It was reported in the New York Times. But then after that, a bunch of debunkers came out of the woodwork and claimed, well, you two were in cahoots, or, oh, the code was commonly known, or just a bunch of excuses to dismiss what he had done, which was rather remarkable. So if you look it up today, it'll say it's never been solved, but it actually was solved by Arthur Ford. And if anyone wanted to read about that, there was a book by Alan Spraggett called, I think it was called Arthur Ford, The Man Who Talked with the Dead.
Well, The Man Who Talked with the Dead. And who's that by again?
Alan Spraggett. It's an old book. It's out of print, but you might be able to find a used copy of it if someone's interested in reading more about that. It's really about the life of Arthur Ford. So the Houdini code experiment was mentioned in there in detail, in greater detail than I just described. But if someone wanted to know more about that, that's, you know, a good example. But, you know, aside from the ADCs that I reported, we, you know, that took me on a path of meeting some top mediums. The first one I met was actually Alison Dubois before the show Medium got big. And this was a rather synchronistic way of meeting her, because I had been watching, 3 weeks after Brandon passed, I was watching a news clip on the NBC affiliate in Phoenix about a mediumship study being done at the University of Arizona, where the medium was blinded from contact with the sitters. And sitters are people who receive a reading. The sitters were in one area and the medium was another. The sitter couldn't speak directly to the medium, and the medium couldn't talk to the sitter. But there was a proxy, a third-party researcher, who would ask questions of the sitters, I'm sorry, of the medium, and then the medium would have to answer. In this case, it was Alison Dubois, and she was doing a great job with a lot of specifics. And then they debriefed with the sitters at the end, and it, pretty much everything she said was right on task. And they weren't just generalities like your grandmother loves you, but specific stuff, you know, like favorite foods or of the deceased person, that they like to go to Las Vegas and gamble and things like that. So I was really impressed, and I thought, gee, I'd love to get a reading from her, and I'd love to be in that lab someday. And little did I know both things would happen. The very next day, I get a call from a man named Jerry Conser, who had been friends with my father, and he said, Mark, look, I know what you've been through, and I know someone who may be able to help you. Her name's Alison Dubois, and here's a phone number you can call to get a reading with her. So that was pretty wild. I felt my dad was pulling strings from the other side to take care of me. And then coinciding with Allison's reading, another kind of remarkable synchronicity happened. So because she was, even then, before the medium show came out on network TV, she was had a big following because she was very good. And so I didn't get the reading till August that year. And, you know, when I saw the clip, it was February. So fast forward to August, 2 weeks before I get the reading, a gentleman hands me a box, and it was someone who had known my dad. And I opened the box, and it had basically a manuscript in there of typewritten pages, all 8.5 by 11, called Your Psychic Potential, A Guide to Psychic Development. And I said, well, where did you get this? And he goes, well, your dad gave it to me before he died, because you were out of state at the time. And I said, well, it's been 12 years since he passed. Why are you giving this to me now? And he goes, I don't know. I just feel like I'm supposed to. Well, 2 weeks later, I have the reading with Allison. And one of the first things she says to me is, your father's here and he's showing me a book, but I feel it's his book and he's handing it to you to take forward. Does that make sense? I'm like, yeah, I think I get that. And I actually later got the book published in 2011. So those are some of the early experiences that I had, both direct, you know, after death communications and with mediums. And then I had three more meetings with mediums that are recorded in my first book. And the last of which was at the University of Arizona, when I was a test sitter for a medium, Lori Campbell, under blinded conditions, that was recorded for a Discovery Channel excerpt. People could see that clip too on my website. It's on the media page.
Okay. So that kind of dovetails right into certified mediums. You certify mediums. What is that process like?
Sure. Well, the full reason that I do this is it goes back to when my first book came out. I suddenly got flooded with people saying, hey, who's a good medium I can see? Who's a good medium I can see? Well, at that point, I knew half a dozen, but most of them were like celebrity mediums like Allison and others. Mm-hmm. And they were so popular, they had long wait lists, some like up to 2 years. And a lot of them did nothing. I mean, that was their career and they didn't do anything else, you know, earn a living. They charge more than some people could afford. So I'm not going to be judgmental about what people charge or don't charge. But anyhow, I thought, there must be more people out there with this ability at a high level that don't have a following and they're kind of undiscovered talent. So they would probably have more availability quicker when people really need it. And maybe they'd charge less. So I put it out there. I developed some protocols after participating in a mediumship research initiative by Dr. Emily Williams Kelly at the University of Virginia Division of Perceptual Studies. She had been doing one. And then I kind of took her methodology and looked at that. And then I also went to my friend, Tricia Robertson, who is the president, former president of the Scottish Society of Psychical Research. and formulated my own protocols. And I've been modifying them to make them harder, really, over the years. I started this in 2014. And as of today, what a medium has to do is they have to do 5 blinded readings via Zoom. So just like right now, we don't have video on. So they have to do a reading with no video. And they're only given the first name of the sitter, nothing but the first name of the sitter. So they have to give them a reading. It's recorded. And then at the end, the sitter has to transcribe that into written format and break it into individual statements. For example, you know, let's say the medium said, I have a son here that crossed over. His name starts with an A, and his favorite food was pizza. So then the sitter has to break those into individual statements and then grade them as correct, incorrect, indeterminable. And then if they feel it's warranted, they can assign extra credit. So let's just say the first statement, I have a son who passed over. Let's say in this instance, it is correct. So the sitter would mark that correct. Then the next statement, his name starts with an A. Aaron, his name is Aaron. That's correct. And I'll give that a bonus because that's pretty good. But we have 2 levels of bonus, a 2-point and a 5-point. So let's say the sitter says, I'll give a 2-point bonus for that one because she didn't get the name, but she got the initial. And then the next one, the favorite food was pizza. Yeah, that's true too. So I'll give a 2-point bonus for that. Let's say the medium said, okay, I have a son here that crossed over. His name is Aaron. And his favorite food was pizza with bell peppers, onions, and anchovies. Okay. Well, if the name is Aaron, that's a 5-point bonus. And that specificity on detail is worth a 5-point bonus. So that's kind of how it works. So we take basically the entire reading. We grade it by the percent of accuracy, comparing correct statements to incorrect. We set indeterminables on the side. Those would be like future predictions or things that for some reason the sitter can't verify because they may involve somebody they don't know or they can't reach. We set those aside unless there's an inordinate percentage of those. So we kind of limit the indeterminables to 33%. If they exceed that, anything over that's going to be counted as incorrect because reading shouldn't, it needs to be, an evidential reading. It needs to have a higher percentage of accuracy than that. So at the end of the day, the medium to pass has to score an average over the 5 readings conducted this way of 75 or better and a minimum accuracy of 65%. So theoretically, they could be 65% accurate, have 2 5-point bonuses and get 75 and then just barely pass. Or they could be 75% accurate and then pass. I've had people score in the high 90s and I've had people squeak by too. But I have probably 5 to 8 people that have scored, you know, in 90% or points or higher, which is a combination of the accuracy and those bonus points that are really valuable because those are the specific hits that are highly meaningful to the sitter.
So after they are certified, do you help present them to the world or are they basically on their own?
No, what I did was I developed a website to host all of these. So today I have 41 mediums over 9 years that have been certified that have achieved these standards and each one has their own page. So someone who's looking for a medium, again, you can never guarantee or promise somebody a good reading, but your odds are greatly enhanced by someone who has been through this process and I know is credible because they did this, you know, with blinded readings. So this website, you know, you can look, if you want to look by region, state, country, you can find people that way. Like if you wanted to do it in person, that might be helpful, but otherwise most all of them will do readings by Zoom. So it doesn't really matter where they are. You just go through the list and see who resonates with you and pick somebody. I don't make any money off this. In fact, I've spent all my own money developing the website, spending the time developing the protocols, the testing. I do have a volunteer assistant who helps schedule and then helps me grade the readings. But this is all out of my own pocket. It's a public service, really, to help people in grief find a good resource, because I know there are some charlatans out there. I don't think there are as many as people think. But there are some, and I want people to avoid those, as well as people who are a bit deluded about their abilities and think they're better than they are. When it comes to dealing with people in grief, you really need someone who knows what they're doing and has this ability at a high level.
Yes. And anything less than that, it just presents disaster.
And the website I mentioned can be found. There's a link to it on my site. So just my site's kind of a one-stop shop for not only my books and my media, but also the Helping Parents Heal website. There's a link to that. There's a link to my dad's videos that I described. There's a link to the Certified Medium website and links to other helpful things as well.
Yes. So thank you for sharing their website, because that was going to be my next question. But my last question to you is about your sister, Robin. You dedicate a very long chapter in your book to her and many lessons learned. Could you tell us a bit about Robin and what she's taught you?
Yeah, well, this really goes back to that Houdini code question that you asked, because she was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. This was 2006. Discovered in 2005, but she was going to pass in 2006. Leading up to that, I had an idea for an experiment, and I asked her if she'd be willing to participate or want to participate to try and help other people in the future to have confidence in the afterlife. She agreed to that. And what I started with was the idea from the Houdini code. And I thought to myself, well, what was wrong with the way Harry Houdini conducted his experiment? What caused people to come out of the woodwork and say that someone was in cahoots with him? And I thought, well, the reason was because any living person knew what the code was. So I thought, well, what if my sister wrote something on a piece of paper, put it in a sealed envelope, and no one knew what it was? And then we sought out medium responses after her passing to see if someone could get the code. And that's really what it was about. The last few days, she wrote this, she put it in a sealed envelope, she initialed the outside. I had developed a friendship with a neuroscientist, Dr. Don Watson. I talked to him about the idea, and he helped develop protocols for conducting it. He asked me to send him the envelope so no one could accuse me of opening it. So I did that. And then we went out to a number of different mediums and sought responses. We collected those. And then, a number of months later, we did open the envelope and compare the results. I don't want to give it away, though, because I think it's one of the better chapters of the book, some more intriguing chapters. I would say, I learned a lot from it in terms of what you can expect or how you would want to format an experiment of this nature so that it has the best chance for success. And I would say, something that you have to understand how mediums work. Some of them get messages visually. Some are clairaudient. So they might get words here or there, like a word or two or some sort of audio communication. But usually that's more in their mind, not necessarily through the ear. Some will get it through the ear, but that's pretty rare, more in their mind. So when you take those things into consideration, you need a message that's put together in a way where that the mediums are going to be able to clearly get that through an image or just a word or two, as opposed to a string of words or, a long sentence or something like that. But with that said, I would say it's an encouraging chapter. I'll leave it at that.
It is a very encouraging chapter, and folks, is well worth the read, is well worth the book if you just read that chapter by itself. Mark, I've really enjoyed our time together today. Could you leave us with a pearl of wisdom for the audience, please?
Yeah, I think, whether it's someone in grief or someone who's just discouraged in life, I would say we're all here for a purpose and we all have a path. So hang in there, you're loved. Even if you don't feel like you're loved right now, or maybe you don't have people in your life who are supportive, hang in there and get through this. It's worth it, because it's actually a privilege to be here. It's a challenging world. It presents us with suffering and obstacles, but those are the things that grow us and refine us into being more than we were when we came here. So it's worth seeing it through and hanging in there. And I think if you could develop, positive half glass full outlook, it'll help you too. It's not always easy, but I would just encourage people to just recognize you're here for a reason and a purpose.
Okay, well, thank you very much for that. And I appreciate your time today. Thank you very much. And I'm quite sure the audience does too, as we have explored this wonderful subject. And everyone, please remember that the most important choice that you can make is what you choose to make important. Consider making the masterful choice of discovering the persistence of souls, but the blessings, light, love to all, agape.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.